ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the program on a Friday lunchtime. In a moment, you will get to meet the brand new Chief Fire Control Officer for Bushfires NT. His name is Brendan Magnoli, and he is on the Country Hour today. Also, before 1:30, because it is Halloween, you'll meet a farmer growing what might be the spookiest flower that you've ever seen.
I've never seen such a dark flower. It's near black, and when it comes out to bloom, it's usually around Halloween, which I find really cool.
It is the last day of October, and we've got a really big Country Hour this afternoon, so I hope you can stick around. We are broadcasting right across the territory on the ABC. Hello there, if you've tuned in via our podcast. Now, a large chunk of the Northern Territory's commercial mud crab fishery is about to close down for 3 months. The Arafura West region, which stretches from Nhulunbuy right through to the WA border, it will close this weekend on November 1 and reopen next year at the start of February. Now, this is happening after a harvest strategy assessment found the catch rate of mud crabs in that region had fallen below a certain trigger point. Here's what the NT Seafood Council's Daniel Capps told us back in September when this news broke.
The way I like to describe it to people, where we're at is this trigger reference point is like your fuel light coming on in a car. So it's not something that's a cause for alarm. But what we're saying is that let's be proactive. You know, there's nothing more territorial than mud crab. And so, you know, we just want to make sure that it's mud crabs this year, next year and into the future.
So this closure, which starts tomorrow, it affects the commercial mud crab industry. And I spoke to one commercial crabber this morning. He wasn't available to come onto the Country Hour today, but I spoke to him this morning and he wasn't happy at all about having to pull up his pots at this time of the year, especially, he said, because it seems the recreational sector is not facing any restrictions at all. Now, NT Fisheries Department, it was expected to make a decision on recreational crabbing rules by October. But nothing's been announced. We haven't heard a thing. David Chirovolo is the head of AFANT, the Amateur Fishermen's Association. David, where are the rules? What's happened here?
Yeah, Matt, quite right. There's been consultation going on with the rec sector following the decisions both by fisheries and also by the commercial fishing industry around their closures. So we reached out to the recreational fishing community and introduced the current problem with the fishery performance. We had about 250 responses to our survey where we talked to people about potential management options for recreational fishing over the 3 month period. And there was strong support from recreational fishers to temporarily reduce the possession limit by 50%. So that's the recommendation that we put to fisheries back at the end of September.
So you went to fisheries and said our members are happy with reducing their daily catch from, what, 10 crabs per person per day to 5 crabs? And what's happened since?
That's right, Matt. That was the most preferred option, and that's the recommendation that we put forward to the government. Since that time, we have been following up with fisheries to understand when that might be coming in. Obviously, it didn't come in on October 1, as we thought it might have started sometime in October. And it currently looks like it is unlikely for it to be introduced as a regulation.
Why is that?
Well, the advice that we have from the department is that they've been unable to find a regulatory provision to introduce a temporary change to the mud crab possession limit, that the current act and regulations as written wouldn't allow for a temporary change and would only really allow for a permanent change. And even then, that's something that would have to be gazetted with a notice period and basically invite public feedback. So it appears as though there's been a bit of a mismatch between, you know, what our sector is happy and comfortable to do to assist with making sure the stocks recover and then bounce back quickly with the legal mechanism to actually affect that change.
So the commercial mud crab industry will be made to stop fishing for 3 months and the recreational sector will not be made to do any changes at all.
It is looking that way, and I do want to reiterate that it's not been the case that the recreational fishing sector or AFANT has been saying that we're not willing to play our part. In fact, we have volunteered that the actual harvest strategy itself does not prescribe a closure for recreational fishing. It does prescribe a closure for commercial fishing. But nonetheless, we went out and consulted and looked at what a reasonable response would be. As I said, we recommended cutting the daily possession and vessel limit in half for 3 month period. But it does look like that is not going to be introduced as a regulation.
So the country really needs to speak to NT Fisheries to ask why on earth this can't be achieved.
Well, look, I think it does speak to something that I guess a number of us in the fisheries space, you know, are aware of. There has been a historical underinvestment in fisheries management in the Northern Territory. There are certainly, some lines to iron out and to make sure that, you know, the way I put it is that you pull the lever and you got to make sure it's connected to a wire. And effectively, what that means is when there's something that we want to do in management action, we need to make sure that there's actually a regulatory way of achieving that. And that doesn't appear to be the case in this circumstance.
I mentioned earlier how I spoke to a commercial crabber this morning and he seemed furious, I think because of what's happening here and that there will be no restrictions placed on the recreational sector. Are you worried as the head of AFAN about the perception of all of this?
Look, I can understand how somebody would be frustrated by it, and certainly we've been frustrated by going out, consulting with our members on what the management might look like, getting a very strong stewardship response, proposing a solution to government, and then finding out that there is potentially not a mechanism to achieve it. So that is frustrating for everybody. The thing I would, though, point out here, Matt, is I think everybody, all major stakeholders know that there is a need to get this right, to review the harvest strategy, to take that opportunity to reform the regulations and probably reform the Act to make sure that those mechanisms work. The other thing I think to keep in mind here around the crabbing is the harvest strategy is prescriptive as it relates to commercial fishing. And whilst the commercial fishers have gone over and above by extending their closure voluntarily, there is a mandatory closure for the commercial sector. There was not a mandatory closure for the recreational sector. And that speaks to a number of things. Firstly, that the commercial harvest is approximately 70% of the catch. And whilst there are some areas where our catch does overlap, there is also a lot of discrete fishing where the performance that's been measured in the commercial fishery is just that, the performance in the commercial fishery, and it's not the performance in the recreational fishery. So I'm not defending the situation. We wanted to see a reduction, and we still have a role to play here. As the peak body, I'll be taking this to my board. We'll be talking to our members, but I think you can expect us to be coming out in November and talking about ways that recreational fishers can voluntarily contribute to sustainability in and around the Darwin region where they're fishing, voluntarily reducing their bag limit by releasing fee if that's something that they want to do. A lot of people who did our survey said that they would be doing that anyway. And so I think as individuals, recreational fishers can still step up and contribute to sustainability at this time. And that's what I expect a lot of recreational fishers will choose to do.
Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thanks, Matt.
David Chirovolo, who is the head of the Amateur Fishermen's Association of the Northern Territory. We're talking crabs this afternoon on the Country Hour. And Country Hour fans, I wonder what you make of that. So starting tomorrow, the commercial sector will be banned from catching crabs in the Arafura West region, which is a huge region. It goes from like Nhulunbuy all the way through to the WA border. No catching crabs for the next 3 months if you're in the commercial sector. And then there'll be another three-month ban out in the Gulf of Carpentaria. It's a voluntary ban, again, for the commercial sector. That one starts on December 1. And as you've learnt today, as for restrictions for the recreational sector, nothing. And it seems it's nothing because the government department can't get the paperwork sorted. Here at the Country Hour, we'll do our best to get someone from fisheries on, because that seems a bit off.
G'day, my name is Floyd. I work in the Spanish mackerel fishery in the Gulf of Carpentaria. I love what I do and love my job, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
You want to talk crabs or something else this afternoon? Our text number is 0487 99 1057. The commercial mud crab industry, its three-month ban of fishing in Arafura West starts tomorrow. At the moment, the rec fishers can continue on as is. On the text line, someone here says, where is the promotion for top-end crab as an iconic Australian food? I want to see the Queensland lollipop reborn as the top-end mangrove lobster. We love our mud crabs. And we want to make sure there's plenty of them around for future fishing, don't we? 0487 99 1057 is our text number at the Country Hour. Bushfires NT has a brand new Chief Fire Control Officer. You'll get to meet him next after a tune by Johnny Cash. I thought this was a pretty good tune for Halloween. It is 14 to 1 and you are tuned into the Country Hour. Bushfires NT has a new Chief Fire Control Officer. His name is Brendan Magnoli, and he steps into this role after spending the last 24 years working for NT Fire and Rescue Service. I caught up with Brendan and asked why he was keen to join Bushfires NT.
Well, coming from an urban brigade, we deal a little bit with the landscape fires, but not in the same size. You know, there's great moving fires, whereas in fire and rescue, it's peri-urban. So coming onto big fire, landscape fires is actually pretty interesting. I've done a deployment to Canada, went over there last year and did a month over there. Plus I've done deployments within Australia in the 1920 bushfire season. I went to New South Wales and Queensland. And in those times, I was in the operations field, in the IMTs, and seeing how things work, having all the teamwork, having everyone in the community that actually wants to come out and do stuff for their community. It's a lot different to a fire and rescue service where it's expected, whereas when you're dealing with people in the community or partialists, they're invested. And having those people put 110% in what they do to assist you in what you do, it's just a great atmosphere to work in that space. And being able to come across as a Chief Fire Control Officer for the NT, I get to play in that space everywhere. So it's a great opportunity, and I'm really looking forward to what I can do in that space.
It's early days, Brendan, but have you had a chance to start meeting with the pastoral community?
I've only met with the Cattlemen's Association, with Romy. So we're just trying to get out there and trying to get my head around Bushfires NT, the change from Fire and Rescue to Bushfires NT. So meeting my internal stakeholders, so within the agency, making sure I get them, and we're moving out. We've got a meeting with Central Land Council next month, so we're going to talk to them with their fire season coming up, just to see what we can do there. And I've got some plans to sort of go throughout the territory to catch up with more people. I went down to Katherine with one of the providers of the aircraft. Had a bit of a chat with them.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so I'm getting out there. It's going to take a little bit of time, but I'm planning on getting out to see most of the people we can. A lot of stakeholders and a lot of invested people in our industry.
And you've arrived at a time where Bushfires NT has received this huge report into the Barkley Complex fires of 2023.
Yes.
Big report, big review, bunch of recommendations. Mm-hmm. Stepping into this role, all those recommendations, is it daunting or is it a blueprint?
It's a blueprint. Especially with the whole agency change with the machinery of government. So having Fire and Rescue Emergency Services and Bushfires NT all together, being able to make some synergies in that, to be able to make sure that we can all work together. Coming out of that with the review into the Barkley, we got extra personnel in the Barkley office now. And with that office, we've actually merged with Fire and Rescue. So we're based inside their station as well. So we've got some synergies working down there, and it's a start. There is still a lot of work to happen. It's not going to happen overnight, but we are going to get there as best we can, and we'll be reaching out to people where we can to try and get their input, their assistance, and help where we can and help where they can.
Over the years, the Country Hour's had some audience feedback from people going, did Bushfires NT and NT Fire and Rescue, do they communicate well? Can I get your answer to that? And especially because of your background working.
Well, with me in the operations role, we used to meet every week. So we'd always get there. I know previously we weren't as close as what we are now, but we did have contact. We did work together. We were able to, especially meet in the peri-urban interface, having aircraft assist fire and rescue with inside the emergency response areas made it a lot easier for fire and rescue to deal with some of those fires. Once it got out of the emergency response areas, once bushfires requested assistance, we could help. But also got to remember that we still got to maintain that coverage within that township. So we could offer what we could offer, but sometimes we weren't able to in the fire and rescue aspect.
I've only just recently learnt that the firefighting units for Bushfires NT aren't sort of compatible with the firefighting units for the NT Fire and Rescue Service in that the hose fittings are slightly different and a few other things like that.
There are some smaller hoses on the Bushfire NT appliances. However, like the filling from the hydrants, no, it's all the same. It's all British instantaneous couplings. So we can still get water, still pass water on. It's just those smaller hoses that are used to fight the fires where they're different.
Right. It's not an issue?
No, not an issue
at all. It was sort of told to me like, God, this is a pain in the bum.
No, not at all.
No, okay. All right. I've got a few more questions from our audience, if that's okay, Brendan. One question here. I've been told Bushfires NT was looking to recruit some people to fill roles that had been left vacant. People applied, but then received an email from Bushfires NT saying that the positions have been cancelled. What's going on?
Yep, so what's happened is those jobs were advertised before I started, and when I've come in, I've wanted to review those positions and their roles and responsibilities. So what we've done is we've put an expression of interest for our internal members, and we've had them fill the positions that we need to fill to make sure that we have coverage in the southern region and also the areas that were empty up here. So those positions are filled in a contract, short period contracts, just to give me and my assistant chief, Nathaniel, time to sit down and discuss what is required, what's in those areas in a bushfire perspective, and also what we need to give back to the community. So they are full, or they are going to be filled at that shortly, right. From internal members. Then we'll reassess, reevaluate, and then we'll advertise again. So those positions will be open to applications.
Right. Because you mentioned earlier there's one person in the Barkley. Is there meant to be two?
There's two in the Barkley at the moment.
Yep,
there is two in the Barkley.
Beauty. Another question, is Bushfires NT short on experienced staff at the moment?
I don't believe so. Maybe one that I've dealt with is more than capable and willing to get in there, do their job, and do the job very well.
And another question from our audience. I've been told Bushfires NT are not planning on standing any crew up or deploying aviation assets to Alice Springs this fire season. Why not?
At the moment, we're still reviewing what the fire season is going to be like. With the NAFSE contract, it's a 60-day contract. So if we throw the aircraft in there now and when there's no fires, they'll be sitting on the ground for 60 days. and we won't be able to use the assets when we do need them. So we'll be monitoring and make sure that when the need is required, then we will be calling on aircraft if they are available.
Right. Because in that Barclay review, it talked a lot about being too reactionary. Mm. So that's a fine line with the aircraft, I would assume.
It is very. You don't want them too late, but you don't want them sitting on the ground doing nothing either. So we've got a few planners within the agency that are looking in that. So weather, what's expected, the fuel loading. And if it is going to be a fire season where we will need aircraft, then we'll reach out to the NAFSE contracts and we'll get them to move down to Alice Springs.
What's your thoughts on how the fire season is shaping up in the centre this year?
It's going to be an interesting year. They have had rain. We have had some fires already. With decent amount of rain, Buffalo grows again. So having that come back, it's going to be interesting how the fire season does go. We are looking at making sure that we have done as much mitigation as we can. And we're also calling on landowners to actually undertake their preparation for the fire season as well. So they're not sitting back and waiting for us. We need them to be a little bit proactive and to make sure that they are safe and we can come and assist when we can.
You've got a big job. All the best with it, and thanks for your time on the Country Hour.
No worries. Thank you for your time.
That's Brendan Magnoli. He is the brand new Chief Fire Control Officer for Bushfires NT. Really appreciate his time.
Worms, slime, and the secrets of the plant world.
Buster!
The Gardening Australia Junior podcast has brand new adventures for little ears.
Cool.
Search for it now on the ABC Listen app.
The text number here at the Country Hour is 0487 99 1057. On crabs, Tim out at Inverell Bay this afternoon says, Matt, a simple start to fixing the problem is to ban the taking of jennies. I've always found it insane that you can take the breeders out of the system. The only place where this is legal is the Northern Territory, says Tim out at Inverell Bay. Jack in Larrakia this afternoon says, love Johnny Cash's Ghost Riders in the Sky. Haven't heard his version for many years, and now I remember why it's the best, says Jack. I agree. My second favourite version of Ghost Riders in the Sky would be from the Blues Brothers 2000 film. Dan Aykroyd, John Goodman. It's solid. It's a solid version. Not as good as JC's, but it's good. 5 to 1 on the Country Hour. Let's turn our attention now to some resources news. There has been an update today from the NT government regarding toxic emissions coming from INPEX's LNG facility in Darwin. I'm joined in the studio by Sam Parry. What's been announced today, Sam?
Well, NT Health have released a statement today announcing that the Territory's Chief Health Officer has declared there is no evidence of increased health risks associated with the current operations at the INPEX facility. So this declaration comes after INPEX admitted to underreporting the emissions of benzene at their LNG plant on Darwin Harbour. As a result of that, the NT government is undertaking a wider investigation in partnership with EPA and NT Health. So that was after a calculation error, which INPEX admitted to. And we're talking about a 13,000% error in calculating how much benzene was actually being emitted from that plant. So now Dr. Burgess, the Chief Health Officer, is working with the NT EPA to assess that underreporting and then report back on the underreporting of those emissions.
Right. So do we know if there's any deadlines around all of this?
Not a deadline per se, but they are expecting to have a report done by the end of the year.
Okay.
Yeah. So they've said today that the emissions of benzene are actually sitting at about 5 times lower than the threshold for launching an investigation.
Right.
So that
percentages can be funny in that 13,000% of bugger all is still not heaps. But yeah. I don't know enough about benzene.
No, neither.
So, yeah. All right then. And have we heard from INPEX at all on this matter?
INPEX have released all of their documentation in accordance with their monitoring requirements, but that will now be overseen by an independent investigator to verify that that data is accurate.
Okay, thank you for keeping us up to date this afternoon, Sam Parry. If you missed the Country Hour yesterday, then you missed Sam's incredible story about a trademark dispute happening in the Barkly region. So the story is you've got Tenebrini Cattle Station that's been operating since 1893, and now the gas company Tamboran Resources has rocked up and wants to trademark the name Tenebrini and also Tenebrini Station. The current owners of that cattle station don't like it, have opposed this move, but IP Australia has ruled in favour of the gas company. Rallon has been trying to challenge the ruling on a number of grounds, including that Tamboran has sought out this trademark in bad faith. But as IP lawyer Kimberly Evans told us yesterday, proving bad faith can be quite difficult.
So here, the difficulty with the bad faith ground from Rallon was that they couldn't demonstrate that they were sufficiently involved in an area of activity that overlapped with what Tamboran was doing. So it's a really particular line of law, but the reality is that you only have trademark rights, whether it's a registered trademark or an unregistered trademark, in relation to the area of activity that you participate in. It doesn't extend across a broad range of industries or activities.
Yes, that's intellectual property lawyer Kimberly Evans speaking to us yesterday. Rallon Australia has got a few days left to appeal, but it would seem Tamboran Resources is going to get the trademark rights to the name Tenebrini and Tenebrini Station. You can read more about this up online right now if you go searching for ABC Rural, or maybe just jump onto the NT Country Hour website. It's time to go to the newsroom, folks. I'll see you back here in 5 minutes for a chat with the Weather Bureau. Let's find out how the weekend is shaping up weather-wise.
Rob Doyle here from Humpty Doo, Rambutan grower, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this Friday lunchtime. It is Halloween. And in a moment, you'll meet a farmer growing what might be the spookiest flower that you've ever seen.
I've never seen such a dark flower. It's near black, and when it comes out to bloom, it's usually around Halloween, which I find really cool.
And we're hearing from you this afternoon. Our text number 0487 991057. Just before the 1 o'clock news, I was reminding you about the trademark battle in the Barkly over the name Tenebrini. Looks like the gas company Tamboran Resources is going to get the trademark rights for the name of a cattle station that's been around since 1893. On the text line this afternoon, Marty says, Matt, I reckon Tamboran Resources has just killed off any of the little social license that it may have held in this community. As mentioned, if you missed our coverage yesterday of this quite bizarre trademark battle in the Barkly, there's a story up online right now if you search for ABC Rural. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Sally Cutter's there this afternoon. How are you, Sally?
Oh, not too bad, thanks.
There's been a bit more rain in the last 24 hours. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we certainly have had some rain. It was basically sort of north of about Elliot, we ended up getting those showers and storms. And if we look at the totals, 11 Mile ended up with that 35 millimetres, Bachelor Airport 28.2, the Marakai Crossing 27.5, Mount Felix 26, Yorelba Ridge 24.6, Mount Stowe was 22.8, Central Plateau on the Arnhem Highway was 19.4, the police station at Daly River got 14.5, our Central Waterhouse 18.4, and Darwin Airport ended up with 13, which took us up over the 50 millimetres since the start of September.
Any more rain to come this weekend?
Yes, there should be. We are seeing a surge that's gone through the southern parts of the NT. It's sort of dropped those temperatures a little bit, and it's got a really distinct sort of dry to the south, humid to the north, and that's going to work its way north. So we're going to see the showers and storms gradually pick up over the top end, but also mainly helped by the one that's going to come through on the weekend. So we're starting to see the cloud bubble down through the Tanami at the moment, so we could see some storms later today down through there, which will help kicked off by this trough. But then the next major trough comes through on the weekend, and we see those storms down the western half extending right across on Sunday, Monday. Things can contract north, and we get some really cold air in. So the Barkly could see sort of 5 to 16 degree drops. The
wow.
Simpson turned to similar. Yeah, they're really big drops. There's not such a big drop in the Leicester on the Monday, so maybe only just up to 10 if you're in the sort of the eastern parts. But that's mainly because you had a pretty good drop there on Sunday with some 5 to 12 degrees. So combination of the cooler air plus also the cloud.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it then warms up again because we've got another trough coming through next week.
Still, so I'm looking at the 7-day forecast for Tennant Creek, a top of 41 degrees today. But then, yeah, as you say, a chance of the odd shower come Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, a top of 32 degrees. That's a...
Yeah.
What about our friends in Timber Creek? Let me have a look here. Top of 42 degrees today. Oh, no.
Yeah, they're going to struggle.
The creek continues to be hot. Yeah.
Yeah, so you got even to places, well, on Bloodwatch Drop goes from 40 down to 29, Alpha Rulam 43 down to 30. So the people out in the Barkly will get that drop. Unfortunately, if you're... Gregory's going to really struggle to get those temperature drops, even in the northern Tanami.
Yeah. Colgra, the roadhouse there near the SA border, 35 degrees today, a top of 40 tomorrow. But yeah, come Monday, 24 degrees. Whoa, yep. That's a beautiful November day in Colgra.
Oh, yeah, they were probably going to be rejoicing to the fact that they're not melting.
Too right.
That 40 is going to be hot. Yeah, and because these temperatures are going up and down, even though we're seeing very hot temperatures during the day, it's not triggering the heat wave warning because it is still dropping down overnight. Whereas in the Arnhem District and the Tiwis, we're not seeing the overnight dropping down as much. So the overnight temperatures are still up compared to what they should be. So that's still triggering the heat wave for another few days.
Yeah. The weekend for fishers, what can you tell them?
Winds aren't too bad at the moment. If you're looking out on the east coast, 10 to 15 knots during the afternoon. So that's your sea breezes, basically. Out on the into Arafura Sea, up to the north. So just pretty calm for there because we're looking at variable 10 knots for Saturday, Sunday. And then around in the Gulf of Carpentaria again, 10 to 15 knots. Not quite so much from the sea breeze causing that because they're picking up there before dawn on Saturday. But we're basically looking at 10 to 15 knots across the weekend.
Okay. And just finally, I feel like perhaps you and I haven't explained to the audience well enough that change that's coming through, that's dropping the temperatures, the amount of rain potentially it could bring with it. Can you run us through that, please?
Oh, it sort of varies a little bit as to how much rain we're going to see, but Savannah Springs, Sunday, we could see 0 to 6 millimetres. There's variations between the models. Some of the models are getting quite excited, some of them aren't quite so excited, but if you get under one of those storms, you probably might get about 10 millimetres.
Yeah. All right then, thank you so much.
That's okay.
Have a lovely Friday. That's Sally Cutter there at the Weather Bureau. G'day to everyone out at the Rock this afternoon. Yallara expecting a top of 38 degrees. But when that cool change arrives, come Monday at Yallara, a top of 28 degrees. That sounds pretty nice.
This week on Landline, the shocking toll of rural crime.
The whole house was destroyed in the fire. The roof collapsed. All that left was walls and some rubble.
That's Landline, Sunday, 12:30 on ABC TV and iView.
The last Palmerston market for 2025 is on this evening. We'll head out to Palmerston Market in just a moment. But first, the Mindle Markets, its last one for 2025 was last night. If you live around Darwin, you might have heard the fireworks. So Mindle, done and dusted for another year. And when the ABC's Liz Travaskis spoke to Alana Eldridge, who's the general manager of the Mindle Beach Sunset Markets, well, she got quite the scoop. Apparently, plans are underway so that next year in 2026, there will be extra Mindle markets. The plan is to have some Mindle markets on a Tuesday in June and July. Here's Alana.
Well, for years, stall owners, the members of Mindle, because Mindle's a member-based organisation, it's an association, a not-for-profit, right? And our members are the stallholders. And so for years, they've all been saying, look, we really should finish the markets mid-October at the end of the school holidays. I'll go out with a bang then, because those final weeks of October are just really hard work. It's too hot. We get rained out periodically, and people don't want to come because it's too bloody hot. And so the concept is, and we need City of Darwin to agree to this because, you know, generously we utilise land that's controlled by the city. We want to instead have three trading days in June and July. So we want to do Mindle Tuesdays, Thursdays and Sundays for the months of June and July.
And the traders are behind this, more Mindle?
Overwhelmingly, that's what they'd like to do. We're now just going through the process of seeing whether or not City of Darwin would be okay with that. And we'd really like to know what the community thinks. See, from a tourism perspective too, because they are the peak tourist months, so you can do Mindle on a Tuesday, head out for a 3 or 4 day tour to Litchfield or Kakadu or wherever you want to go, come back and catch a Sunday.
Yeah, well, so who has to sign off on the City of Darwin?
Yeah, City of Darwin. We'll be talking to them in the coming weeks about the concept and seeing how we can make it work.
That is Alana Eldridge from the Mindle Beach Sunset Market speaking to Liz Travaskis. So there you go. The plan next year is to finish Mindle Markets halfway through October, but have some extra trading days on a Tuesday in June and July. Speaking of markets, the Palmerston Markets. The last one of the year is on this evening. Ross Dudgeon's out there at the moment. How are you, Ross?
Good, Matt.
How are things shaping up for the last Palmerston Markets of 2025?
All good so far. Yep, no rain in sight, which is good. The radar map's clear. So, we were a bit worried after the rain yesterday afternoon, but hopefully we'll get a clear one.
Now, this is the Country Hour. What sort of beautiful local produce are you expecting up for sale this afternoon and evening?
I'm amazed at the variety of produce that people offer. They're similar stallholders and the ones that go to Rapid Creek, but they come out to Palmerston on Friday nights, and they've got a huge array of tropical fruits, the fresh vegetables that are grown out in the rural area, and it's always lovely to go walk, you know, into the middle of that area and just look at the variety of food that's available and fresh produce available from our local growers.
Are you seeing more support from farmers over the years?
Well, some of the stalls have been coming for as long as I've been going to the market. So they're long-time stallholders. They're family concerns. You know, the whole family gets out there and gets into the market and also bring their produce in, pick their produce, bring it into the market. So, yeah, I feel that the variety is increasing, you know, year on year. I know the stalls are bursting at the seams this time of year with mangoes and all sorts of stuff that you don't see all through the year, but it's a seasonal thing.
There should be plenty of mangoes there this evening.
Yes.
We are right into harvest. Yep.
Yeah, and we've got a Halloween theme for the kids to get dressed up, and there'll be prizes for the best dressed kids and best dressed adults so that they can go around and do some trick-or-treating as well.
Fun. All right. Final plug. Last one of the year. When does it all start?
Well, officially 5 o'clock. They're allowed to start selling the fruit and veg from about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but officially from 5 till 9 p.m. And people come down with their family and sit out in the grass and under the stars and have a good night.
Thanks so much, and all the best this evening.
Thanks, Matt. See you.
That's Ross Dudgeon, market coordinator for the Palmerston Markets. Last one is on this evening. Bit of a Halloween theme as well. Yes, today is Halloween, and whether you celebrate this or not, you've no doubt seen all of the decorations and treats in the major supermarkets. And as an agricultural nerd, what I see are the pumpkins, the big orange pumpkins. Ken Duncan, he's from the Burdekin region of Queensland and is now into his 15th year of growing these spooky pumpkins.
Well, we've just completed our 15th season of Halloween. We started 15 years ago, and it's not a growing thing, but it's something that we grow for Woolworths each year, and they really class it as an important part of their Halloween program. They have some pumpkins, so we've been doing that, and we've got a good relationship. Yeah, we've just finished our 15th year.
And how many tons did you get through this year?
Oh, probably around 400 tons. We haven't added everything up yet. Woolworths take the majority of it, and slightly out of spec fruit or wherever. Sometimes some of them go to Dreamworld in the Gold Coast, so a little bit into the shops.
Now, 15 years ago, what made you want to get into growing Halloween pumpkins?
Well, my wife Sonia and I, we're pumpkin watermelon growers predominantly, and we were approached by a nice family in Bowen who actually started that up a long time before we came along, and they wanted us to help them in growing to fill their orders because it was getting too big for them. So we jumped on board with them and we grew from there.
What is the difference between growing a pumpkin for eating and a Halloween pumpkin?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to grow a product there that's never going to be eaten. But you do see a lot of people enjoy them with their kids carving, and being part of the Halloween program is a fun time of the year.
And what do you look for in a good carving pumpkin?
What we aim for is to get something that's affordable to people. So we can grow them as big as you like, 10, 12, 15 kilos. But we try to keep them to around that 4 to 7 kilos, so it's affordable, but big enough for people to carve a good pattern with.
And do you do much carving yourself?
I have done. I've got a grandson. Each year we normally make a few monster faces or whatever, but it's probably not as cool for him now. So I'll wait till the next grandkids get old enough and we'll do it again.
Do you have any tips on how to carve a good pumpkin?
I'm not that arty myself, but I have learnt in the past that just to hollow out the centre as much as you can, and then if you were to put a light or candle inside, it glows like a bedroom lantern.
That is Ken Duncan, who's a farmer in the Burdekin region of Queensland, speaking to Brooke Tindall. Now, there's a crop that's worth a fair bit of money today, but come tomorrow, I reckon at $0 a kilo. No one wants a giant orange, no good to eat pumpkin tomorrow. But they're worth a bit today on Halloween. 21 past one on the Country Hour. On the text line, Jack says, "Ah, Matt, I see Timber Creek is keeping up to its usual record heat for October. In October, it's always low to mid-40s. My friends from Timber Creek, they always come up to Darwin to cool off." Can you imagine telling someone in Melbourne that they need to come up to Darwin to cool off? Thanks for the text, Jack. 0487991057. It's Halloween. If pumpkins are not your thing, what about buying some spooky flowers? The Country Hour's Annie Brown has visited a nursery that's in the business of growing quite unique black flowers.
A flower farm in springtime is not exactly a spooky place to be. But this time of year, at Springview Irises in Ebden, Victoria, a near black bearded iris variety is in bloom. Katie O'Grady explains.
So black suited, it's by far the darkest variety that we grow, and I've never seen such a dark flower in local nurseries or just in general. It's near black, and when it comes out to bloom, it's usually around Halloween, which I find's really cool. And people are just drawn to it just because it's so unique. And we grow about half a row of that particular variety. And when that half row is blooming, it's just a really unique feature that people have never really seen before, because it just is near black. It's that very, very dark purple. So it's, you know, draws a lot of attention.
So I didn't know this until you told me, but yeah. You can't get a pure black flower, can you?
No, so there's no true blacks in terms of flowers, but they certainly get very close. They are very, very dark purple, but this one by far is the darkest I've ever seen.
It's beautiful, yeah.
It is.
What can you tell us about, I guess, irises and bearded irises in particular for, I guess, the uninitiated?
Okay, so bearded iris are extremely tough, and we don't have town water here, so we had to pick a flower that I loved that was going to be hardy. So they can survive prolonged dry periods for months, and they withstand the dry conditions really well. They also love frosts, so they're that real ideal plant that love the heat and they love the cold temperatures, which it is hard to find a plant that likes both of those. They're very, very tough. They multiply very fast as well. And we've only ever started with one rhizome of each variety, and in a year or two, you might have 10 growing from that same plant. So they're very tough, they grow very quick, and they're a plant that keeps on giving.
And how would you describe what a bearded iris looks like?
Okay, I would describe a bearded iris as looking like a French can-can dancer. So particularly on this sort of angle, we can see that these are the standards and the falls. The falls look like they're ruffled skirts. So they're very delicate petals. Some of them have a beautiful shine on them. And to me, they just look like a beautiful little can-can dancer wearing her skirt. So,
when most people picture an iris, they think purple. But did you know the flower is actually named after the Greek goddess of the rainbow?
I got into bearded irises in 2018. I fell in love with them the minute that I saw them, and they come in such a beautiful rainbow of colours that I just knew that I had to grow them. We grow 800 different varieties of bearded irises, so there's certainly a lot of colours that we have on offer, and some of them have broken colours, some of them have veining on them, there's bicolour, there's bitone. And I think people are not aware of the different variety and colours that bearded iris do come in. They often think of the whites, the yellows and the purples, but there's just such a broad spectrum of colour with them.
Katie runs one of the few bearded iris farms around the country.
I would say there's probably less than a dozen in Australia now, which is why, you know, our farm is trying to spread the awareness of bearded iris. People do think of the purples, the yellows and the whites, the heritage varieties, but you're not often seeing the more modern varieties that we grow in local nurseries, so there's not that awareness of them. So it's not a common flower that is grown throughout Australia. I'd say, definitely less than a dozen flower farms, which makes us quite unique. Like, we just have so many repeat clients coming back to the bearded irises. Once they've started with one or two, they see their beauty, and because they're so easy to grow, they love the full sun. You know, they're not a lot of work. Like, perhaps dahlias might be more involved. The iris virus starts really quick with them. So, but I always say out there that there's, you know, worse addictions out there. So if I can just buy a few more flowers, then that's okay. Yeah.
That is Katie O'Grady from Springview Irises in Victoria, speaking to Annie Brown. And if you're curious to see what these black-bearded irises look like, plenty of wonderful pictures up on the ABC Rural website this afternoon. They look pretty cool. Now, if you missed the start of today's Country Hour, then you have missed our story about crabs. The commercial mud crab industry, starting tomorrow, November 1, will be banned from catching crabs for 3 months in the Arafura West region. Restrictions were also set to be placed on the recreational sector. But as AFAN's David Girovolo explained to us today, despite the rec sector's willingness for a rule to be put in place to reduce the possession limit for mud crabs, it would seem the government has been unable to make it happen.
Strong support from recreational fishers to temporarily reduce the possession limit by 50%. So that's the recommendation that we put to fisheries back at the end of September. Since that time, we have been following up with fisheries to understand when that might be coming in. Obviously, it didn't come in on October 1, as we thought it might have started sometime in October. And it currently looks like it is unlikely for it to be introduced as a regulation.
Why is that?
Well, the advice that we have from the department is that they've been unable to find a regulatory provision to introduce a temporary change to the mud crab possession limit, that the current act and regulations as written wouldn't allow for a temporary change.
That is David Tirovolo speaking to us earlier. The Country Hour has now sent some messages to the Fisheries Department to try and find out what is going on there. You've got the rec sector willing to reduce possession limits and the Fisheries Department unable to make it happen. So hopefully on Monday we'll get a few answers for you. Enjoy the rest of your Friday and keep it rural.